The night before the race, I was in a car with two other friends that and they were in the front of the car and I was in the back. And we were waiting to turn left into our campground and there was no turn lane. So a truck behind us going 60 miles per hour smashed into our Prius. And of course, it was a truck. And next thing I know, I'm at the hospital and then, you know, several hours later on a helicopter to Colorado Springs and just like shattered my pelvis. And so that was, you know, a couple of months of no weight bearing after that. And then it was like, well, shoot, I don't know if I'll ever run again.
Welcome back to the Keep Pushing podcast. Today I'm joined by ultra marathon runner and Guinness World Record holder Pete Kosselnick. What's going on?
Hey, Chad. Oh, it's not much. Good to be here, man.
Nice to meet you, man. Just to put everything in context for anyone watching right now, you have the Guinness World Record, right, for the fastest run across America. I believe it was 42 days.
Yep. Did it. 7.5 years ago now, I guess. Yeah, back in the fall of 2016. It was quite the adventure, and I had a great support team with me the whole way, making me do nothing but run, eat, and sleep. So it was incredible.
Yeah, man. Well, when I was researching for my trip across America, yours was like the goalpost, like what I compared everything to. Cause like I saw no one cross it in that speed. And it just boggled my mind that it could even be done that fast on foot. I mean, I just couldn't even comprehend it when I first started. So without having you to like have something to compare to, I don't know that I would have, you know, like push myself. So yeah, I appreciate, you know.
Well, I was looking at your record and I'm just thinking like, I don't know how I could skateboard what, 55 miles a day. That's just like my back would give out on me. Like I've never really skateboarded much, but you know, I think I could maybe do a couple miles a day. So I think it's all like a reference to, you know, and I think that's what's cool about ultra running is like, yeah, like when you hear about, gosh, you know, I remember I was talking to my girlfriend Lindsay earlier this morning. Like, I remember when, like, in high school, running like 4 miles was like a really long run, and it's just crazy, you know, how you get into a sport and like, you know, when you're someone like you or me, and you just kind of like keep doing it, and then like you keep raising your own bar, and you don't even, you almost have like your eyes closed as to what, you know, is it considered extreme, and then, you know, you turn around and look back at what you've done at a certain point, you're just like, my goodness, I've like, my whole reality is completely a totally different reality from what it was, you know, 10, 15, you know, 20 years ago.
Yeah. And if you're like me, like you do these long runs and you feel like, I barely even push myself. Like, you're still not satisfied. You just keep raising that bar, you know? So funny. So how long did you run before, you know, you ran across America? Like, was it something like you got the idea, started doing it obsessively, or were you doing it like your whole life?
Yeah. You know, I think, gosh, I was kind of late to the party with running. I remember going to it all kind of started because I grew up in Iowa and, we didn't really have, my family would go on road trips out west a lot and we, you know, hike 14ers, you know, 14,000 foot plus mountains. Such as, you know, like Mount Elbert in Colorado, Mount Whitney in California. And I just remember, you know, that when I did Mount Elbert, I think I was like in maybe sixth, seventh grade. And I was like, this is so cool. I wish I could do this in Iowa. And then my uncle, he said, well, then you should do cross country. And so I went to the cross country, you know, meeting in middle school, I think. And the coach said, okay, seven of you are going to run. And I counted, there was eight of us boys at the meeting. So I was like, I'm definitely going to be the one not participating. It's going to be embarrassing because I'm going to be the only one just like standing on the sideline watching while everyone else runs. So I didn't have the courage to do it. And then I think it was like, well, I know it was my junior year of high school. I just randomly signed up for cross country, got into it. So really just did it for 2 years in high school, didn't run in college, but in college probably put on a decent amount of weight, especially you know, when things involve drinking and things like that. And so then I think it was my senior year of college, I was doing an internship in Washington DC, And I had run very little on and off during college, just kind of here and there when time allowed. But that was where, you know, in DC, I was doing that internship, and I found that I had like a lot of time on my hands. So I was like, how do I stay out of trouble if I, you know, I'm doing, you know, this at most 40-hour-a-week internship, and I'm like kind of out in a place where I don't know a whole lot of people. So I really got into running out there, and signed up for the Marine Corps Marathon, and that was, gosh, 2008. And then, so that was kind of where it started for me when I was 21, doing the Marine Corps Marathon out there. And then, fast forward a few years, I started doing ultra marathons in 2011. That same year in 2011, I met Marshall Ulrich, who had run across America in 2008, and he had just written a book. And that was where it was just like, oh my gosh, like going full circle with the whole road trip thing and combining road trips and ultra marathons. It was like, I got to do this someday. And then it just kind of worked out to do it in 2016 with some life circumstances where my work was gonna let me take a 7-week leave of absence to go do it. And I was like, I got no excuse. I got to do it. So that's the long answer of long and short of my running career.
So before that marathon, what was the furthest you'd run? Like, what do they do in cross country? I'm not really familiar, you know, like back in.
Yep. Yeah. Cross country in high school, it differs from state to state. In Iowa, it was 5K. Okay. So, you know, I think I'd done like a 5K, 5Ks in high school. And then I did, you know, I kind of worked my way up to that marathon over a couple months, like 10K, half marathon, 20 miler, and then did the marathon. So yeah, it was a quick progression into the marathon distance.
That was like, you signed up for that and you forced yourself in that, like, what, 6-month period or something, 3 months?
Yep.
Do you have any tips? Or, like, I mean, now you've run so much, like, looking back, what would you say helped you progress into that, like, marathon, ultra marathon range, like breaking through that kind of the shorter, you know, like 10Ks and stuff like that?
Yeah. I think it's you always want to make progress. And so, like, I think for me, one thing that if I did make any mistakes, it was sometimes I would just keep pushing, like wanting to add distance, add speed too quickly. Cause I think when you first start, and I'm kind of seeing this right now as I kind of get back into running, is, you know, I would make, you know, you make so much progress right away when you start running, like from, you know, just walking and then, you know, a little bit of jogging and then running. But then you want to keep making that same like increase every day once you start to, and then I've seen a lot of friends that, you know, they get a little carried away too soon. And so I think it's just, you know, keep telling you, like, it's good to take days off. You know, you don't have to get out there every day, and you're going to have, you know, bad days. And so, like, there's going to feel like days where you came back, but if you just keep getting out there and doing it, you're going to keep making progress. So I think that's the thing. And then just learning how to fuel, when you start getting to those longer distances, you know, a lot of people want to be, you know, this skinny fast runner, but if you know, it's a catch-22. If you're not fueling correctly, you're not going to be able to run very well. So definitely, you know, getting enough calories and then, you know, while you're running is key, and being able to do that, especially for a marathon and longer distance.
Yeah, for sure. And then once we start talking a little more about the Cross America trip, talk more about diet, because I'm super interested in what you had to eat and, like, figure out, you know, your whole game plan for that. But leading up to the Skid Across America, like, when you met what was his name? Ulrich?
Yeah, Marshall. Yep.
Marshall Ulrich. When you met him, that was basically when the seed was planted.
Oh yeah.
And then were you, like, working towards that, like, ever since, basically?
Yeah. Yeah. That was in 2011. And, it was more like something that, okay, maybe I'll do this when I'm, like, retired someday, like 55, 60 years old. So it was more like that type of idea. And then I think it wasn't really until about 4 years later in 2015, after meeting Marshall, that I ran the Badwater 135 in Death Valley, which is a point to point ultra marathon from the lowest point in the US, or lowest point, yeah, in the Western Hemisphere, I think, Badwater Basin to Mount Whitney, which is the highest mountain in the lower 48. And, you know, I surprisingly got first place at that race. And so that was where it was like, you know, I felt like I didn't really have a whole lot of other goals in ultramarathon.
Yeah.
Like at that point.
Yeah, and like, so what's I was next? Like,
yeah, what do I do next? And so I was like, well, gosh, like if I could do anything I ever wanted to do, it'd be run across America for the record. And so that's where like it was crystal clear to me that I was going to attempt that record, you know, even if I had to quit my job, which I thankfully didn't have to, but, you know, I was going to do anything I could to go for that record within the next, you know, year and a half, probably, you know, the next year in 2016 in the fall, which is usually the best window for doing it. If, you know, San Francisco to New York.
Yeah. That's funny, man. You mentioned your job before. I was in the same exact situation for two different cross country trips. And luckily I'm like a server, run the food truck, and they're like super cool. So, you know, they can fill in the spots easily.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's definitely like a significant thing to just leave your job. Be like, hopefully I come back to something, you know?
Yep. I know it's a huge risk. Yeah. It's like,
yeah.
And, but you know, I found that anytime I've taken a risk, it's always worked out for me. So yeah. I've taken a couple big ones and that was, you know, one of them. So it's hard to do and it's hard to plan for sometimes, but I think you just have to, but if you really sit down and talk to the people around you, I think you can always figure out a way to do something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And to me, like, I don't know, what's the point of life if like you have this idea and like, you're not trying something like that. You're like, yeah, you need money, but you could always figure something out. I feel like you gotta like, if you're compelled to do something, you gotta like at least try, you know?
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. So, all right, you get to the point where you're ready to, you know, do this trip. How far from like when you decide you're going to do it until you actually take off? Because I know for me, I think it was like a year, which is pretty long for me. When I get an idea, I'm just like, I start. But there was so much planning and route stuff, diet, you know? So yeah. What was that like? Yeah.
Yeah, it was, you know, it was about, I'm trying to think, I think it was, the idea to do it at a certain date approximately was about a year and 3 months, because that was about Badwater 2015 until fall of 2016. But the meat of the planning, I think, was about a good 6 months, which is kind of crazy, kind of not crazy. I don't know. And it was just like, oh man, it was just, it's just like almost too much sometimes. But it was, you know, I had a lot of good help around me. I had, you know, a 4-person support team the whole way. You know, and they were very helpful in planning, because they, you know, some of them had done stuff like that before. Some of them had other, you know, knowledge about, you know, logistics and things like that. And then on top of that, I had my sister, and I'd be interested to hear about how you kind of developed your route. My sister has kind of always been my route guru for things like this. And so, she and I kind of, she put together like turn by turn Word document directions the whole way across the country, which, you know, there's some sections where there's, you know, 100 mile, you know, a couple hundred miles in Nevada where you're just on the same highway. So that's easy. But then there's also like days and, you know, coming in through New Jersey where it's like 100 pages of turn by turn directions and photos.
Yeah.
And so that was a big process too. And then it was just like, it's great, 'cause you can like scout the route on Google Maps with Street View. And so you don't have to like go out and drive your whole route. But, that was like a big thing for me, was just getting that right. 'Cause you know, if there's like a road out or something, or you can't like get through, and like, you're like, well, what do we do now? Do I just run back, you know, 40 miles and take a different route? And so that was like the thing that I was probably the most like, I don't know, just scared about, I guess, is just like road conditions and things like that.
Yeah, me too. That was like, in some routes weren't uploaded to Google, you know, which I found out later, where I think some of the spots where I ended up, I had to go back and like work my way around, because there was no route. You know, sometimes running, you can go over dirt and stuff, but skating, I needed like concrete. So
yeah,
you know, sometimes I had to go back. But yeah, I still can't, like, looking back, I think the planning might have been the hardest part of the whole trip, just because I'm not good at sitting down and like, there was just so many details, you know?
Yeah.
It was, you know, meticulous. And then you did it for the Guinness record. So did you like, you had to log everything and do all that stuff, make sure you're like meeting those requirements too, right?
Yeah. We had a pretty good little like template of like getting like people's signatures along the way that either ran with me or just, you know, like a police officer that was like, what are you guys doing type of thing. And so,
yeah,
that's the funny thing about like Guinness. I don't know like how many you got, but like, in like technically for Guinness, I don't know if you need that many like witness statements, but then like we had like a pile of, I don't know, like 100 of them. And I almost think that actually took like, you know, I think it was, I was almost ready to do my second transcontinental run by the time I got it ratified. So
yeah,
I don't know. It was kind of a mess with just, you know, waiting on it, you know, but whatever.
It's so hard to get in contact with them too. It like takes forever if you need to find out something. And so I did this trip by myself. So every night and morning, anytime I stop, I'm personally writing down every single thing. So like it became a lot, you know what I mean?
That'd be a lot.
You're fully focused on this like huge thing. So, you know, that it was definitely like, I'm happy I did it. Looking back, it's just cool to have, but it was definitely a lot of work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gosh.
So when you first started the run, how'd you feel? Were you a couple of days in, like head of steam, like, oh, I got this? Or were you kind of unsure? How were you feeling?
Yeah, I went out a little aggressive, I would say. the record was, you know, Frank Giannino, awesome guy from New York. He, you know, he has a running shoe store there. He, you know, fast forward to the finish, he was there waiting for me at City Hall, so that was really cool. But his record from 1980, I think I got that year right. Yeah, 1980. And which is funny because he was the same age as me when he did it, you know, 30.
Oh, really?
Or 20, what would that be? 36 years earlier. And so his record was upper 60s, like 67 or somewhere around there, miles per day. So I knew I had, you know, my goal was basically 70, you know, low 70s per day if I wanted to have a little bit of a cushion. But there's just not much margin for error, I realized, because the first 2 days out of San Francisco, I did just like 80, 81 miles, I believe, both days. And it's like, was it the Richter scale for earthquakes? It's like in ultramarathons, it's like, for every 10 miles you add per day, if you're doing it like day after day after day, it's just like you double, triple the amount of, you know, destruction on your legs, because not only, you know, is it that many more miles you're doing, it's that much less time you're getting to recover. So, you know, if you're getting 10 plus hours to recover versus only like 8 or 9 hours, that's a huge difference. And so, yeah, then the third day was just kind of like three strikes and you're out. And maybe I just like barely foul tipped day three, but day three was coming through Yosemite, and you're going through Yosemite from the west, and you gained so much altitude, and I kind of overlooked, I looked at the total elevation gain across America, and I was like, that's not a whole lot. But the only problem is there's like 3 or 4 days where you pretty much get all the altitude up and down.
Yep.
And day three, I was stubborn. Went hard. I think I still did over 70 miles with 73-ish miles in Yosemite with all the up and down. And that just created a whole lot of issues. And so I actually ended up taking day seven off in Nevada because I was circling the drain with this anterior tibial tendonitis.
Wow.
Kind of like the front of your ankles where it's just burning and you can't even land. Like even if you're going, it actually hurts more to go downhill. So I just could not get my, you know, pace per mile under 10 minutes per mile, which was, you know, at the first couple of days I was doing 8:39 minute pace.
Yeah.
But yeah, taking that day off was huge because it got me just enough over the hump where over the next like 5-6 days, it just kept getting a little bit better, even with doing 70 miles per day. It finally got to the point where by the time I was past the mountains, it was healed up. So I think it was kind of like, you know, the first week was a disaster in some ways. Second week was like somehow try to make your body recover and get broken in from that first week. And then once I got past 2 weeks, I felt actually really good about going for the record and getting it. But yeah, it was just, it's kind of bizarre because it's like, I think every single day I was at 70 plus miles across the US, except for that one day where I just did nothing and just sat in the RV in like literally the most remote stretch of highway right in the middle. There's like this 100 and I want to say it might be even 200 miles between Tonopah and Ely, Nevada, where there's just no services or anything. And it's, we were right in the middle of it. And so that was just one of the, it's kind of a cool memory, but at the same time, like I was just a very odd, bizarre situation to be stuck out there with four other people hanging out.
Yeah. Just hanging out, doing nothing. No, it's like, I mean, were you thinking like you might not do it because of that one day? Cause I feel like that would have got in my head a little bit, like shit, like that's a whole day off. Cause I realized if I took a couple of hours off, I was getting nervous each day. Like, oh, I'm shaving it down. Like, you know, so.
Yeah. It's strange. Cause like I wasn't really that like, discouraged at that point, but like looking back on it, if I was like watching someone attempt and I see that they took a day off, I'd be like, this guy's done. He's not going to do it. And I think that was almost, you know, we didn't even have like cell reception. That was probably a good thing out there. Cause I couldn't like see what anyone like, you know, was like, oh, he's probably done. But, it's kind of strange. I think sometimes when you're just like in so deep into like wanting to do something, like you find a way. And I knew that I was going to like do whatever it took to, you know, without cheating, because there are people that have cheated doing runs across America. So I was going to do anything within, you know, whatever I could within legal bounds to make sure my body kept moving down that highway. And so,
there's a lot of, like in skateboarding, you can skitch on a car, or, you know, if there's a hill, people don't really skate up hills at all, you know, cause the wheel, like, but, I just made it the point, like, I'm not getting off my board. I'm doing it like 100% legitimate, like same thing. I'll do whatever it takes, but like, I'm sticking by like my own set of rules, you know?
Yeah, no, that's cool. Cause I was going to ask you about that. Cause I know like, even in like bike races, like, you know, I don't know that much about cycling or skateboarding, but I know like in the Leadville 100 bike, like, you know, they get off the bike if it's too steep and they walk their bike. So that your rule is not to do that, like walk.
No, I pushed up every hill, and it's so uncommon in skateboarding. Some of these hills, I'm sure like nobody's ever pushed up. I'm like looking at the map and the elevation. I'm like, can a skateboard even go up this? Like, I don't know that yet, you know, I'm like figuring it out. So for me, it was kind of the same as you. That day three area was like Joshua Tree, Palm Springs. It was a huge climb, steep elevation. And that was kind of where I knew, like, all right, if I make it up this, like, I could pretty much do the whole trip. I did get some pretty bad shin splints, though, that once you're going up elevation, I don't know how it is for running. I imagine it you know, hurts your body a lot more with elevation.
Yeah. Yeah, but I bet you had some pretty uneven days, like with whenever you had a lot of ups and downs, like, you know, and then you can just coast down, and it's like you're making like 10 times as fast progress, probably.
It's kind of catch-22 because you get to the top, and I have these big cruiser wheels because they're a lot softer and they go faster. So you're on like, because, you know, you're on rough ground sometimes. But going downhill, you pick up so much speed, you actually, like, it's dangerous. Like, you can't even go down. So I would have to skid my foot. So I was almost getting more sore going downhill.
Yeah.
You know, trying to stop my speed. And, like, you know what I mean? So it was almost like I needed that perfect kind of mellow coast, you know?
But, I see that. Yeah.
Yeah. Have you – so you mentioned the pain that you got, but did you get shin splints at all? And, like, do you have anything you do to deal with those if you do get them?
Not really shin splints, like, and gosh, you know, I'm very like kind of like hands off when it comes to recovery. You know, it's more maybe nutritionally with getting enough protein every day and things like that, but you know, for when I ran across the US, it was, well, both times, from, you know, Alaska to Florida, and then, you know, the first time San Francisco, New York, just getting my feet elevated as quickly as possible once I was done. Like, I didn't want to, you know, stand around or go do anything. I just, like, the second I'm done running, I'm getting my feet up like within a few minutes. So I don't know. I probably should do more like, and I do nowadays like do a little bit more like PT, you know, physical therapy exercises to like strengthen, you know, and manage some of those other muscle groups. But I really didn't when I did that. Yeah. So it's very low key.
I didn't either. You know, in the first couple of days I iced, because in theory I was like, all right, I need to ice every day. And as I was doing the trip, it just like faded away. Like I didn't even have the time or the mental capacity to like,
and that's the thing. Yeah.
You know, so I just put my feet up and like eat and that was it. But yeah, it's, you know, what I realized too, after I got to a certain point, they just disappeared and I don't know if I'll ever get them again. Like, I think I broke through a wall of pain and my body just got used to it. Now I feel like no matter how far I run or skate, they just don't really come.
So, yeah.
I don't know.
No, yeah. I think it's, you kind of break your body in and like it, you know, that's why I think like the 2 week threshold for me, you know, into that, you know, six week run was where my body just got to a point where it was broken in. Like I couldn't, like I would be screwed if I had to go like run a 5K race or something, like anything with any speed. But like my body just kind of like shifted to this like different new reality of what it, you know, it's gonna let me go.
This is what we're doing now.
Yeah, it's like it like almost like just like I was on these train tracks and it was like, you can go this fast, here are the rules, you can't go faster, but you can, you know, we're gonna let you just stay on that same, you know, same trajectory forever if you want to.
So what were you, what was your diet like for that? Because I imagine, so skating, I'm burning calories, but I'm sure it's nowhere near what you were burning running, you know. So I don't know, what were you doing, like 4,000 calories a day or something?
Like 10,000, I think.
Really?
Yeah, we didn't count it like religiously to the calorie, but it was pretty clear to me that we were, you know, when I would just kind of mentally think, okay, throughout the day, I'm like churning out, like I'm eating a good 300-400 calories an hour while I'm just out running. And that, you know, was like 13 hours a day. And then, so that's like, you know, over 5,000 calories right there. And then I was eating four meals a day of at least 1,000 calories each. And so, yeah, I was, and then I'd wake up in the middle of the night and that's like where it's like my stomach never was not working that entire run, even when I was sleeping. Cause I would wake up at 2 a.m. and eat like 2 protein bars and then go back to sleep. Cause I'd be extremely hungry after I ate a huge meal, you know, at like 7 or 8 o'clock before bed. And I would just
up and then your body was like, we need to eat like right now. Really?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. It was crazy. So yeah, my formula was generally like, you know, miles run times 100 calories, you know, plus at least 2000 calories, like as a baseline. And so it was, easily over 9,000 every day. And there were some days, I think even like with the more altitude gain days, it was like, you know, up to 13,000 calories a day.
Wow. So was it tough getting all that down while you're running and doing this physical activity? Like, or was your body just like ready for it?
Not really. I think, you know, I think because I had done so many big training weeks, I think, you know, half of it for something like this is just, you know, you got to train your body, but I think it's just training your stomach and like being used to doing, you know, like 200 mile weeks, you know, going into it. And like, you know, if you're doing 200 mile weeks, you're eating easily, you know, 4,000 or 5,000 calories a day. So I think it was just like kind of upping that a little, you know, well, a lot, but just being, and then just doing like, you know, a lot of ultramarathon races where, you know, you have to put down 300-400 calories, you know, an hour, you know, for 24 plus hours. And that, you know, that's kind of like a simulation as well.
For sure. Yep. What were you eating mainly? Did you have like a set kind of, you know, I don't know, what menu or like protein bars, burgers, like, you know?
Yeah. Just about anything. We would treat ourselves. I remember like Cinder, she drove the RV, massage therapist, and she cooked. We called it like new state steak. So every time I hit a new state, like people kept like, I don't know, like gifting us like steaks, especially like in the Midwest. So we're like, okay, we'll have steak tonight. But no, it was just, I mean, it was, you know, gosh, it was, you know, I wake up in the morning, I'd, a bunch of oatmeal was usually how I started my day. You know, a lot of caffeine to kind of get me out the door at 3:30 in the morning. You know,
yeah.
Try to get to 20 miles before the sun comes up. But throughout, I mean, tons of protein bars. I was so sick of protein bars when I got done. I think I probably ate at least like 5 of those a day.
Yeah, same here. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm done with them. Yeah, yeah.
Lots of like, always wanted like a breakfast sandwich, like, you know, 20, like once the sun came up, if there was like a nearby town with breakfast sandwiches, we'd get that. Tons of trail mix. Trail mix was like a staple. I mean,
yeah, same here.
Tons of that and lots of soda. This like toffee that one of my friends in Nebraska, she has a toffee business and she sent us a bunch of that. And that was like, probably like an easy 1,000 calories right there every day too.
Yeah, it's funny because like people were like saying stuff about my diet or what I was eating, but like I don't know. At the end of the day, I would finish my 12 hours of skating, and I never really drank soda before this, but I would just crave like an ice cold like giant Coke from a gas station or something.
Oh yeah,
you know? Yeah.
Yep.
It was funny, yeah. And like. You know, I don't know what it is, if it's like my body's just like put as much calories in like immediately or what, but
yeah. So yours was you were self-supported, is that right?
Completely solo, just yeah. Me and a camelback and that's it.
Cause
yeah.
And we can get into this more later, but I remember when I did my self-supported one, like it's tricky cause you had like, you might go a long time without going through a town. And so you got to like stock up. For me, it was like, that was like where it was like, I remember there was one point where I had nothing but trail mix for like 2.5 days and it was terrible.
I've had, yeah. And like, you know, water was a huge thing because I had this camelback, which was like a lot of extra weight on my back, you know, yeah. If I fill it up 3 liters, but then you're going through the desert and you're like, you know, and it's super dry out there. So it disappears quick. And you're like, hopefully one day I actually kind of ran out in the middle of nowhere. And luckily there was this random, like broken down gas station where people threw shoes just in the middle of nowhere, but people would stop and like, check it out. It was the only landmark and with like 50 miles on each side and people stopped and gave me water, luckily. But I mean, I've been in some situations where, you know, it's different being completely solo. I'm sure you've experienced that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
So did you also have, what was your crew like? Did you have, was like 4 people with you?
Yeah. Yeah. San Francisco and New York had 4 people. It was Chuck and Dean would, they would leapfrog like literally every like 2 miles, and hand me food and drink. So I like never, like the first few days I would carry a water bottle, but I was just like, no, I think I don't even want to carry anything in my hands if I don't have to. Like I had this live tracker that would show where I was every 2 minutes. And so that was like enough to me just figuring out like how to carry that big old thing.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, they would just leapfrog every couple miles and, you know, we were very efficient. Like I might slow down to like walk when I was like getting stuff from them and handing back, you know, a bottle or grabbing some trail mix or, you know, something else. And so, yeah, that was, you know, they were like the day, you know, out there all day with me. And then there was Tracy. She would run logistics, do anything else that needed to be taken care of up ahead, in another vehicle. And then Cinder was driving the RV where she would, I would usually do 2 segments a day. So I would do like, you know, aim for 40 miles, first section, where mm-hmm. Chuck and Dean are leapfrogging in a car. And then at around 40 miles, you know, wherever it was safe to park the RV, I'd meet up with the RV for lunch and then hop back out after lunch and do around 30 to 35 miles. And that was that was good because like mentally getting past the halfway point in the like morning section was nice.
The mornings were huge for me. Like getting that early start and feeling good about it and like getting it under your belt is the best feeling.
Yeah. And trying to get all the dark miles out of the way in the morning instead of night, just from like a safety perspective, less people on the road in the morning than, you know, after dinner time. So trying to get done before dark was also like a big motivation for me. Like, cause I always hated, like, there were a couple of days where I didn't get done before dark and it was like, all right, we got to put on the safety equipment, reflective vest, lights, all that stuff. And I was like, I don't want to do this. Like, I just want to get done. So
yeah, I made a rule, like no running at night, just cause I thought it'd be too dangerous. People are out sometimes, like sketchier people than early in the morning, you know, it was just like, but I'm also solo. So, you know, it's a little, were you sleeping in the RV every night or did you get a hotel?
Yeah. RV every night. We were lucky in that we were always able to, you know, with a plus or minus, you know, a couple miles window between, you know, 70 and 75 miles in general each day, find a place to park the RV right off the road where I could just run to it every day.
Yeah.
So that was, that saved, I think, a ton of time. Cause I know like sometimes if you're like stuck in the middle of like a national park or something, you have to like, you can't park along the road or if it's just, you know, a sketchy highway. And so that was a very big positive for us that we were able to do that and save, you know, a bunch of time and money going to hotels.
100%. That was like the main, you know, that efficiency right there was what I was like trying to keep up with you. And I was like, how come I, like, it's that. It was like sleeping on the road. Cause sometimes I'd have to skate like 8 miles back to a hotel.
Oh, really? Okay.
To stay the night, leave my mark and then go to a hotel. Like, you know, and I based my whole day around, okay, there's only one hotel and it's 65 miles. I'm going 65 miles today because the next one's 110 and I'm not going to make that, you know?
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Well, you know, and, you know, so I'd love to compare like how you did it to like when I did in 2018, after doing San Francisco and New York for the record across the US.
Yeah.
I really wanted to do, I was not like completely satisfied with running across the US just from the standpoint of like the road trip side of me, like the ultra marathon side of me was like completely satisfied with getting the record, but like, I didn't spend, you know, I didn't have any time to like meet people along the way and like take photos. I never had my phone on me while I ran. You know, I'd check it for 15 minutes, maybe at the end of the day when I was doing San Francisco, New York. I just didn't have time to like do anything to like enjoy.
Quick side note, did you listen to music while you ran at all or no?
San Francisco, New York, never listened to any music. And it was crazy because I was running through Eastern Pennsylvania almost like, I think the third to last day of the run. And I heard them playing, like blasting music, like in this town. Cause I think they were like putting on like a 5K.
Yeah.
And it was the first music I had heard in like 40 plus days. Like it just blew my mind. Like my ears have not listened to, cause I just was not, I didn't have music in my ears.
Yeah.
We were in an RV, never watched TV. It was just, it was funny. And then like, I'd look inside like people's houses and I'd see like Law and Order coming on and like the opening credits. And I'd like, be like, man, I
mean,
that was so strange, but so then like, you know, this idea to run from Alaska, Florida popped up and I think that was very similar kind of to, it's actually funny cause I averaged the exact same miles per day that you averaged doing that.
Yeah.
Like it was like around 55. And so that was like my opportunity to actually like see stuff that I wanted to see, you know, have a little bit more time per day to like take photos, stop, and then, you know, do it self-supported, which is, you know, like you, the way that 90% or more of people that, you know, cross America do it, you know, self-supported. And so that was just a really interesting experience for me. Cause it was like, I had all these rules kind of like you had with your skateboard where I went everywhere on foot. So like I would stay with people along the way, like occasionally, but if I was going to stay at their house, like I was going to like run and, you know, a mile into town to go stay there and then a mile back in the morning back onto the main road. And also just things like, and then I had, you know, my stroller with all the, you know, the water weight was like the biggest thing, pushing my stroller with all my gear in it. And like, sometimes at the beginning of the day, it'd be, you know, it feel like I was pushing like 60 plus pounds, you know, half of that's water. Then it, by the end of the day, when I had like no water left, it was like so light. And so there was always like this, like.
Exactly. You always benefit. A give and take.
Yeah.
Like how much water is like the bare minimum to get by today? Cause I don't feel like pushing this whole thing.
Yeah. And then with like places to stay, like, did you camp at all along the way?
So I didn't, because I was like focused on getting the record and I was making daily vlogs the whole time.
Yeah.
So I filmed like 10-minute videos every day, edited them and uploaded them to YouTube that night. So people were like coming along with me through the whole trip. So I needed a hotel to like charge and edit and like decompress. I needed like some kind of, you know, that could be a trip like where I did it with a tent, but I don't know. It just didn't seem possible for what I was doing.
That's the way I was too. I think I only camped, like I brought a tent with me. I only camped maybe, it couldn't have been more. I think it was like four times out of 99 days.
55 miles. And then like your body, like you just like sweat and to lay outside like that. You're just like, oh, that's a lot.
Yeah. I remember there was one day where I got to a place and I was kind of like you, where I would do, you know, when I did San Francisco to New York, it was very even. It was like 72 miles, 73, 72, 74, 71 miles, like very consistent. But with, you know, Alaska to Florida, I had some days where I think I hit, actually I did a double day one time because of a forest fire, and that was almost 100-mile day. And then there was, you know, days where I'd do 75 miles and then the next day was 25, just based on where there were places to stay along the Alaska Highway. And I remember there was one where it was like raining all day and it was like 40 degrees, which is like the worst conditions to run in. You would rather run in like 32 degrees with snow than 40 degrees with rain. And I remember I got to this place, I think it was like Bucking Horse River or something in northwest Canada, and like they didn't have any rooms inside anymore because it was like there was a construction crew staying there, and it's the only place. Usually there's like one place like every, you know, 50 to 70 miles, which was perfect for me along the Alaska Highway, but there were no other options. And I told them, I will pay you whatever it takes. Cause they had like tent sites and there were like, you know, some people actually tent camping. And I was like, I might die if I don't get it. I will pay you $100 if I can just sleep on the like cafe floor tonight.
Yeah.
And so they, and they found me like this, they got like, bless their soul, they got me, I don't even think they made me pay, but it was like this, like up there, a lot of the accommodations are like trailers, just because, you know, it's like near the middle of nowhere. And this was like a trailer that I think was meant for like staff, and it hadn't been used in a long time. And all there was in there was like a mattress and a pillow with no sheets or like pillow cover. And I couldn't be more thankful for that than anywhere else I've ever laid my head to sleep at night.
Yeah, indoors I made it.
But I think just the accommodations on that run were just I think was almost the most interesting part, because it was like, I remember staying like above a bar, like at a little motel that had like two rooms above this bar, and there was just a lot of things like that. It was kind of cool to think back on.
That was my favorite part of the whole trip, is like, you know, you're finding these places to stay and meeting people. And when you're by yourself, it lends you, like, you know, you're not with a crew where you guys are together, you eat, you're kind of like open to experience. You meet someone, they're like, what are you doing? You know? And same thing at the hotel too, you know?
Yeah. Cause it was just like, you know, I'd park my stroller outside and I'd walk in a gas station, and like five of the six people in there would be like, what the heck are you doing? Like we're on the Alaska Highway. And so
there's nothing around
I think,
here.
With the crew, you know, it was great to have the crew, you know, going for the record, and but you're kind of like sheltered in a way. So like in my mind, if I'm not going for like a record in particular, I think it's almost better to do it, you know, solo, because then you get a chance to be more vulnerable out there and like meet people along the way, and like sometimes, you know, be kind of in a tough situation where you need someone to come through for you, and they always do. And you know, you don't want to like risk your chances too much, but as long as you know you're careful with all the other stuff, it was a really cool experience.
It's funny, all the things that you're like fearful of when you're put in the situation, like somehow someone comes through like every time, you know what I mean? It's almost like the fear is the worst part. When you're in the situation, it kind of figures itself out, you know?
For me it was, and also just like I was scared that, I think my biggest fear, and I think it's just because other people kind of put it in my head, was like getting attacked by like a grizzly bear or a moose.
Yeah.
And it, by far the most dangerous part of the run was cars. Like,
yeah,
I didn't have any near close encounters with any wildlife. I had probably 10 close encounters with cars. And so it's just, yeah, that's the other thing. It's just like, yeah, when you're planning something like this out, you're like, okay, I need bear spray, I need this and this. But then it's like, the obvious thing is like, okay, wear something very reflective that people can see you, blah, blah, blah. And so that, yeah, was the other thing
that,
too.
That's funny. That was the thing that scared me the most about my trip, thinking about the whole thing. It was like, what if a coyote or, you know, a snake or a bear or like someone, a dogs hate skateboards. They like get aggravated by them and chase after you. So I was just like, I don't know. I brought Mace with me. I never used it. I just brought it with me. But yeah, it was really all in my head. Like, I saw one coyote, didn't really care. Like, the dogs, once I got off my skateboard, they chilled and there was no bears. So
yeah, yeah.
I mean, it could happen. And when it does, it's like, you know, but it's you know, it's interesting being out there alone, because it also, it gives you more time to be introspective, you know, and you're like pushing through all these things and not having someone to depend on, and also like facing your own thoughts the whole time is definitely an interesting experience.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Yep. And yeah, and from Alaska to Florida, so you know, we were talking about no music from San Francisco to New York. Now, did you listen to music when you were out there?
I did. Maybe, I don't know, 25% of the time. If I had like a huge hill or something to get up, I'd use it for motivation.
Yeah.
Other than that, I actually kind of got bored of it, you know, and being out there, it kind of like naturally, like, you know, just went away. I just didn't want to listen.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why. So when I did Alaska to Florida, I had like Bluetooth speakers inside the stroller and I would listen. So I was like, I called myself a moving boombox, and it, music just poured out of the stroller. Yeah. And I remember one day that, speaking of like thoughts, I didn't sleep very well. I think it was after I camped, because like anytime I camped, I just called it the penalty box, where I would just like lay inside my tent, not sleeping, and just like really just resting my legs for a while until I just got up, you know, at 2 a.m. and just said, all right, I'm done with this.
Yeah.
And I remember that day, like it was, I was running and like, I don't want to listen to music. Like, I'm just not in a good mood. And like, I put on this, like, it was like ocean breezes, like calming music. And there was like 10 songs on it. And I listened to that whole thing the entire day for like on repeat for like, you know, 10 hours of running. And so I listened to each song. And now anytime I hear it come on my phone, if it like ever just like comes across one of those songs,
yeah,
it just takes me back to that day. This is like, yeah, the only way I was gonna get through that day was just like listening to this calming music on repeat for like 10 hours. It just, that's my so mind funny. Went to so many crazy places that day.
The ambient music, that's so funny. That music or things like that could bring you back so clearly, like right to the moment. It feels like I'm back out there, like a certain song or something. Yeah.
Yep.
So that whole trip, how many miles was that? It was like over 5,000, right?
So, yeah, it was like 5,380 miles, somewhere around there.
That's insane. So 50 miles roughly a day. So that was, how many days did that take?
99. My like A-plus goal was to do 100 days. And I think, yeah, I came in maybe like a day early. And so, yeah, it was kind of crazy because I planned the whole, I don't know, like, did you plan where you're going to stay like every night for the whole duration prior?
I didn't plan one hotel.
Nice.
Everything was like that day, like how I'm feeling, how far it is, like, can I make it? I just went by that. And yeah, it turned out like the rough plan I had though was like 56 days or something, and I did it in like 57. So I was like almost spot on to like what I had planned.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, it's funny how that works. Yeah. I had every town mapped out, and like, I think there was a few adjustments where like someone reached out in like a town, you know, 5 miles over that would let me stay at their house. So like, I would kind of adjust a little bit here and there, but no, it was pretty much like crazy. Like I had this like laminated 2-page spreadsheet that in my stroller of like every town and like possible place to stay on it. And like, I think I hit, you know, the in the key, like Key Largo or Homestead, Florida, like right before you get to Key Largo, like on the exact day that I like, I was planning to be there, and I was just like, gosh, like, I can't believe it all worked out. Like, because, you know, early on, within like the first couple of weeks, there was a forest fire that, you know, I was like, oh, great, here we go. I'm going to like be stuck in this town for like a week and get way behind. But thankfully, it was only for, you know, 24 hours. And so, yeah,
and
it was pretty incredible.
During that?
Yeah, it was funny because I through a friend of a friend, I like became friends with this local police officer, and he helped me out a lot because he was like texting me updates. And it was actually a really cool story. I was stuck in Watson Lake, and there were people from like nearby. There were a bunch of truck drivers that were stuck there, obviously, because it's the only highway you can take without taking like a 500 mile detour. And but then there were also some people that, you know, lived in the area who had to evacuate to Watson Lake. Thankfully, maybe a few houses might have gotten burned, but like, it wasn't like where anyone died or anything like that. But I remember that night, like, they put on this free, they have the Northern Lights Center there in Watson Lake. This is a town of like 1,000 people, but it's like this cool little theater. And they played like this, like, Northern Lights documentary, and like the guy that like made the documentary was there to like do a Q&A afterwards. And then they had like a violin concert after that, that they just kind of like, I think they just kind of like decided last second, well, we're going to like entertain the people here.
Yeah,
and then like halfway through it, I felt terrible because I get a text from the police officer at like, this was like 9 at night, saying all clear. And like, okay, well, and I'm hitting the road. And so it was just kind of like, all right, I'm like, I felt bad. I'm like, oh, I'll duck out of the concert. But it was just kind of a cool experience to be like stuck in that town with a bunch of other people. And like, I was technically like a refugee because they're like, where did you come from? Like, I ran here from Alaska. They're like, what?
Yeah. That's so funny.
Yeah.
Sometimes people can't even comprehend it. Like, I'd say it to them and it like wouldn't register in their head that it was even possible, you know?
Yeah, I remember in Anchorage telling the lady at the gas station, I was running into Key West, and she's like, like, her, the look on her face was like, that's like 5 planets over. What are you doing?
Yeah. Like, what? Nah, this guy's crazy. It's not even true.
Yeah.
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 That's funny. So after that trip, did you have like a come down from that? Like, you know, going back to work has got to be different after, you know, 3 months off, you know?
Yeah. It was interesting because I had left my job a couple months before the run. So I was actually, you know, away from work for, you know, a good half year. And then, it was just kind of like this weird experience of like, you know, I had my car was like on its last leg before the run. So I got rid of that. And like, you know, it was just an interesting like experience to like finish that run and then like being like, okay, I need to find a car. I was coming back like to civilization. Yeah. And you know, like, I get to like sleep in the same home, you know, every night and like have like a lot more stability. So I think that was like the weird part of it. And then like, but I think the good thing for me was I came back to the company I was with before, and you know, I've been with for, you know, over 11 years now.
Wow.
And so that I think was good for me because it was like, all right, I'm like back with people I know. It wasn't like a whole new like culture shock of like starting something completely different. But how about for you?
I went back to work, but it was like, you know, I'm a server, so I'm constantly like, you know, talking with people and stuff, and it's a local place, so I know a lot of the people around. So it's actually like kind of hard to work because I'm like always having to tell the story of skating across America, you know?
Oh yeah.
That was a little, you know, it's like I had to learn to adjust a little bit, but it's like anything, you know, and like that first 2 weeks when you start the trip, you're breaking into a new normal. And then after a couple weeks, you know, you get back used to that.
Yeah. So. Yeah. After, you know, and I think part of the reason I even did Alaska to Florida a couple of years after San Francisco and New York was after San Francisco and New York, my partner and I, we had moved to a new town. And so like literally I started that run from San Francisco, New York, coming from Lincoln, Nebraska. And when I ran through Lincoln, I kid you not, when I ran through Lincoln, Nebraska, I ran And like, it just happened that the house that we had in Nebraska was right on the course. And so I had lunch there. And that day, my realtor and like a bunch of coworkers, friends came over, had lunch with me. Realtor came over and like said, all right, your house is sold. And so like, that was the last time I ever stepped foot in that house, was like running across America. And then after the run, I went home to, I rode back to Iowa with my parents. And then I got my car back from them and drove back down to Missouri, where, you know, we moved at the time. And that was where I actually started working remotely for my company. So it was a very odd, like, almost like isolating experience, because I went from, you know, working in an office every day to working from home every day. And it was in a small town. And like, I think that was just a very odd shock for me, maybe even more so than, you know, coming back to work after being gone for a half a year the second time.
Yeah, that makes sense too, because you were so used to that kind of routine. Now, you know, you don't have those same kind of, that same environment, you know, you're just by yourself. Like, I work better, actually, I think, when people are around me. You know, when I'm just by myself, it's a little harder to get motivated.
It is.
You know? Yeah. So you mentioned your, was it wife or girlfriend?
Girlfriend.
So how does she deal with like this stuff? Like, is she cool with whenever you take trips, or is it like, do you FaceTime every night? Are you separate? Like, you know.
Yeah. Well, yeah, full disclosure. When I did San Francisco, New York, and Alaska, Florida, I was married. And Nikki was, she's always so great about that. You know, we both were very independent people who had very like big goals in life. And so
that's awesome.
Yeah, she, you know, and to this day, you know, we're still friends, and she, you know, and I think we made each other better in a lot of ways to do, you know, pursue things like that. But you know, nowadays, you know, I haven't done any like crazy adventure since Lindsay and I have been together, but you know, for about a couple of years now. But you know, I do have, you know, some ideas of adventures I want to go on, and she's fully supportive of that. So no, it's just that, and that's the thing. Like, you know, I don't know about you, but like, I've seen a lot of people who aren't surrounded by, you know, a supportive significant other. And so, you know, that's always something I've always been lucky with, is just everyone around me is always so supportive of anything I want to do, which I don't take for granted, but I also like, maybe sometimes push the boundaries of that as well.
Yeah, for sure. I'm familiar with that. Yeah, I mean, it's something that's like a non-negotiable. I feel like my brain doesn't even, I'm not even interested in people that aren't in that realm of like understanding. Like, this is my life. This is my happiness. This is like what I do. And if you're like, you're not cool with that, like nothing against you. It's just we kind of got to work in that way, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because... Yeah. Yeah, because then, you know, if you aren't allowed to be who you want to be, then that becomes an issue, I think.
Starts coming through in the everyday life, you know, maybe you get resentful or frustrated, or like, you know, over time, you know.
Yep.
But so you mentioned you got some ideas. Are you allowed to share them? You're not sure yet, or?
Yeah, no, yeah, like, well, yeah. You know, and it's kind of been a crazy last, oh gosh, I guess 6 months. So about 6 months ago in August of 2023, I was in a car accident I was out at the Leadville 100. You know, I have all these like weird Forrest Gump, like full circle things, but it's like, you know, like Leadville's at like Mount Elbert, where like everything, I feel like I'm just like stuck in this, you know, circular formula where I got into running because I was out at Mount Elbert when I was, you know, in middle school, and I got into running, and then I keep coming back to Leadville to either run or pace or whatever for friends. Mm-hmm. So I was out there to pace my good friend Tyler Andrews. And the night before the race, I was in a car with two other friends they were in the front of the car and I was in the back, and we were waiting to turn left into our campground. And there was no turn lane, so a truck behind us going 60 miles per hour smashed into our Prius, and of course it was a truck. And next thing I know, I'm at the hospital, and then, you know, several hours later on a helicopter to Colorado Springs and just like shattered my pelvis. And so that was, you know, a couple of months of no weight bearing after that. And then it was like, well, shoot, I don't know if I'll ever run again. Starting to get back into it now. But for me, I don't know about you, but it's like the only way I was going to get through this whole recovery that I'm, you know, getting through right now is if I put a bunch of junk on the calendar. Like if I was just going to say, okay, I just want to like, you know, hang out in 2024, maybe do some jogging again. And like, that's not like, I'm not going to do it. Like I have to have like something that's like really hard to meet. And so I already had Cocodona 250, which is a 250 mile trail race from basically Phoenix to Flagstaff. Okay. Pretty gnarly race that I didn't finish last year in 2023. I already signed up for it before the accident and it's in May. So that's my like big goal to see May, like, all right, can I go, you know, less than a year from a car accident to doing a 250 mile race? And it's not, you know, it's not really about time or anything, but, no, I'm signed up for a lot of races this year. And it's scary, but it's like a good scary, I think. Cause yeah. I'm not so much worried about the time I run them in, but you know, if I do all the races I'm signed up for, it'll be the most 100+ mile races I've ever done in 1 year, which is, would be eight.
Which is incredible after the injury to do something like that is like, yeah.
Yeah. And we'll see, you know, I don't know. I guess I just have to see it. You know, I don't know if it'll be possible, but, that's like the goal. And then if I can pass that test this year, I've been meaning to run across Australia for like 5 years, to go for the record.
I was looking into that too. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. I think, you know, logistically it's a little trickier than going across the US cause it's like 90% of Australia is like Nevada and Wyoming. But yeah. To me, that's kind of intriguing because it's not a whole lot of traffic, you know, to deal with. And so I think that if I could finally do that run across Australia, that's like, that would be really incredible to find. Cause there have just been so many, like I wanted to do it really like a year or two after Alaska to Florida in 2019 or 2020. So I said, okay, 2020, we all know what happened in 2020.
Yep.
2021. It was like, okay, it's still kind of too early to get out there. And then 2022, I was going to go out there. And then I had kind of just like, combination of mental and, you know, after I went on this training run in Phoenix, I had this crazy heat exhaustion and then just the mental side of it, I was just not gonna do it. And then 2023, getting a car accident, and so now it's like 2024, recover, maybe in 2025 go for it. So that's like the big thing that just keeps like sitting out there for me.
Yeah, that's incredible. I think, like you mentioned before, I think it's super important to like have those benchmarks or goals, or you know, because when I did the Skate Across America, I was coming out of a lateral and medial meniscus surgery, so I was out for a couple months, you know, 3 months or 6 months, whatever it was, and that was my goal. Like that's what I was running and working towards getting back to, you know. So I think just having that, whether you hit it or not, just really helps, you know, motivate you, gives you something exciting, you know, to work towards. But
yep,
I mean, dude, I don't know, when I saw that news of your accident, my heart was like wrenched for you, because like, you know, you have this skill that like only 1% of people in the world have, you know, and like to have that taken away, not in your control, was like, so I imagine how it must have felt for you, you know.
It did. Yeah, you know, for me, it's like this whole process has made me realize like it's not even really about the goals, like the end finish line or anything like that. It's just like the day to day. Like, and I think being cooped up, you know, for several months after that accident was, I think, the worst part of it for me. It's not even whether or not I can like reach any of these goals. I think it's just the not having that, like just being
mission,
you know, just being stuck inside, sitting around, like, I never want to be like that. And so I think for me, it's just now that I can actually kind of start doing a little bit of that, it's, you know, I feel like I'm already about 90% fulfilled again.
Yeah. So how much are you running now?
I'm trying to get, you know, it's a lot of like walk run mix, but I'm trying to get to the point where between now and May I can hit 100 miles in a week on foot. That's kind of like my benchmark of whether or not it's even going to be possible to do Cocodona because it's 250 miles. So I got to do at least like, you know, 40% of that distance in a week to even feel like I have a shot. So yeah, I'm getting out there every day doing, you know, 8 to 10 miles here and there, trying
Nice.
to get,
That's more
you know,
than me,
back up.
man. That's incredible bounce back.
It
That's unreal.
doesn't feel the best, so it's like
Of
so it's
course.
like sometimes you just want to be like, 'cause like I put all my runs out there on this app called Strava, and it's like sometimes friends are like, "Oh wow, it looks like you're fully recovered." And I'm like, "It doesn't feel great." I'm telling, like, and I don't want to tell, like, be a Debbie Downer, but it doesn't feel the best. But I also like I'm to a point in recovery where I'm not going to screw anything up, you know, from a, you know, bone healing perspective. So yeah, I'm getting out there, you know, 10, 11 hours a week to get, you know, 60 miles in right now, and hopefully keep building that.
I know the feeling. It's like, you know, you're out there moving again, so you're super grateful and it's awesome, but like in your head, you know where you could be at. So
Oh yeah.
but other people on the outside are like, yeah, it's awesome. You're like,
Yeah. So
Yeah, you're getting there though, man. That's huge progress. That's unbelievable. And like, even just talking to you now, like your spirit about it, and like, it seems like you were never deterred and you were dead set on getting back and with a smile on your face. I'm sure there were darker moments, but you know, the way you're going through it is incredible. And it shows.
Yeah.
It's like the skills you learned pushing across America and all these trips is like translating to getting through this surgery, you know?
Yeah. Yep. No, I've been very lucky, I think, in the grand scheme of things, and just with all the help I've gotten from other people. And yeah, I think, well, and I think, yeah, just the like running across America, it's like I kind of know, like, oh man, like my back, it's like killing me, or like there's no way I'm gonna run tomorrow, so I might as well. But like I remember like those memories of like San Francisco and New York, like after I sat down in the RV before bed and then getting up and barely even being able to like hobble back to the back of the RV and just like, I'll be fine. And it's just like, and it, you know, I'd have friends that would come visit and be like, "Is Pete gonna be able to run tomorrow? He's like barely able to stand up." I'm like, no, it's normal. And then, you know, 8 hours later, your legs are back to normal. And so I think that, you know, piece of it for this, like now, even though I'm only doing, you know, 10% of those miles per day, just like when I go to bed, I'll be like, no, I'll be fine in the morning. And so I think that's having that experience physically has been very good for me.
It's good to have that in your back pocket. Always, like whatever you're facing, you just think back to that. You're like, all right, I could push through.
Oh
Oh
yeah.
yeah.
You betcha.
Well, dude, thank you so much for sitting down, sharing your story, teaching
Thanks for
me
having me.
about running and everything. I run a little bit. You know, the furthest I've done is like 9 miles. So I try, like every time I push farther, I want to run further. And my knees from skateboarding over the years don't really agree. So I always argue, I'm like, should I be pushing this hard at what isn't my main hobby? You know? So I'm
Yeah,
always
I hear
walking
you.
that line, but I love
Yeah.
it.
Yeah, no, I'm the same way. I get very nervous about doing anything outside running. I actually probably get injured more often doing non-running stuff than running, just 'cause it's like you get outside what you know.
Yeah,
Like that's
exactly.
why like I never go skiing or anything like that, 'cause I'm just like, ah, I'm gonna destroy everything else.
People say to me, they're like, I have never snowboarded a day in my life. And as a skateboarder, they're like, you would kill it. I'm like, you don't get it. I'm gonna go out there, I'm gonna push myself as hard as I can and just get hung up. Like, I already know it, so I'm staying away. All right, man. Well, awesome talking to you.
Yeah,
And hopefully we get
I
to
love
meet.
hearing your stories.
Yeah, man. All right. Good talking to you, Pete.
Thanks, Chad.
All right. Take care.
You too.